بشار عندك صمد عنا ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويا بشار ويا كذاب وتضرب انت وهمي باب الحرية صارت على الباب ويلا ارحل يا بشار
يلا ارحل يا بشار
ويلا ارحل يا بشار
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Young Pelton, an author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer. He is the publisher of Dangerous Magazine and has a first-hand perspective on the war on terror from direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. His books include The World's Most Dangerous Places, Come Back Alive, Three Worlds Gone Mad, License to Kill, Hired Guns in the War on Terror, and his autobiography, The Adventurist. He has an article at Foreign Policy, A Weapon of Minor Destruction, How Eric Haroun, the American jihadist in Syria, was duped by the FBI into incriminating himself. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Young Pelton.
Hey, Ian, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing better than Eric Haroun is. He appeared in court in Virginia today, in federal court, and he was not granted bail, and he is being held over for trial. And I take it that according to the title of your article in Foreign Policy, the FBI duped him into incriminating himself.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. You know, I'm doing a new magazine called DangerousMagazine.com, and we were doing something on Syria, and we were basically finding odd and unusual people who are in Syria, sort of, you know, journalists, war tourists, and we came across Eric, and I interviewed him, and he had a very strange tale to tell. The main contention here is that he had a weapon of mass destruction, and the FBI talked to him when he went to the consulate, and through his constant, I guess, willing overtures, he explained to them that he was with a group called al-Nusra, which was declared a terrorist group, and he did have an RPG, and he fired it. And then they realized that they couldn't actually charge him over there, so they went to his parents and his sister, and they said, oh, we've got to get Eric back here immediately because there's a hit out on him. How can we get him home? And his dad said, well, give him a free ticket. He always loves a free ticket. So the FBI bought him a ticket, and when he landed in Dulles, they made him repeat his story again on American soil and then arrested him for having an WMD.
And there's a law against having a rocket-propelled grenade a WMD, and why is the law written in such a way that he used it outside of the United States? I would think it would be a far more worse crime to use it inside the United States.
It's a fascinating law because it's ever-changing, and of course it's a very wide net. So WMDs used to be NBCs, nuclear, biological, chemical. And those laws were written, you know, back in the 80s when the Russians were trying to move nuclear materials or the Chinese had, you know, chemical weapons. After 9/11, they realized that an aircraft or even a propane canister could be a WMD. And then they basically wrote up anything that is indiscriminate. In other words, an RPG can be fired at an aircraft. It can be fired at a building that has indiscriminate victims. So it became a WMD. Now, here's the irony. Right now, the U.S. is supplying RPGs with training to Syrian rebels to be used against Assad. So it's kind of mind-boggling that the FBI would invest this much energy in making themselves look like fools.
Well, why did they want to get this guy some kind of trophy? He sounds like a complete idiot. I mean, he was with a more secular group. This is his excuse, I understand, from your article at Foreign Policy, Robert Young Pelton, A Weapon of Minor Destruction, How Eric Haroun, the American Jihadist in Syria, was duped by the FBI into incriminating himself. He was with this more secular group, and here he is, a hard-drinking, womanizing American army vet who hadn't served abroad. He was in the stateside driving a truck and had an accident, right? And he was on disability. And he then gets stranded in a town, I think, in Syria. And the only people around are the al-Nusra people. And why they didn't shoot him on the spot, I don't know, because he's obviously, you know, not one of them. And he certainly is not pious and an Islamist. He's photographed hanging out with these guys in the back of a truck?
No, it is the plot for a sitcom because Eric Haroun likes the ladies. He likes to drink. He likes to party. He's got videos on his Facebook I've been driving 120 miles an hour on the Autobahn, driving around Beirut completely drunk with five friends, sticking out the sunroof. He is in no way, shape, or form a fundamentalist, but he did post on his Facebook site, you know, an only good Zionist is a dead Zionist, and he seems to have an aversion against Israel. Now, he was involved in the Arab Spring. He went over there, like many people did, and waved the flag, and apparently he got arrested. He does like to hang out in Beirut, so he saved his money when he worked at the mortgage company. And on his last trip over there, he met some friends, and they decided to get into Syria and try to fight. So he did join the Free Syrian Army, but the very first offensive he was on was a joint operation with al-Nusra. Al-Nusra is the tail end of what used to be al-Qaeda in Iraq, which we were told was destroyed, but reconstituted itself in Syria. He escaped, or he basically had to escape, with the al-Nusra on the back of a truck. They held him captive, and then after listening to his story, they allowed him to go out fighting, and apparently he saved some people, and they thought he was a great hero. But he got the hell out of there. He was only in there for a month, and his passport was destroyed. So when he was talking, when he was out, he started talking to the media, and he talked to the Times of Israel, who wrote a story about him being a fundamentalist and essentially the stereotype of somebody that goes to fight a war because he believes in Islam and Wahhabism. And he freaked out. And when I talked to him, he would say, I'm going to hire a lawyer to sue those people, and was terrified that he might be on a no-fly list. And he had just come back from an interview with the embassy in which he went to get his passport. When he went to the embassy, that article written by Times of Israel runner and Fox News was actually on the desk of the FBI guy.
And this is in U.S. Embassy in Istanbul, right?
Istanbul. Yeah, it's actually a consulate. But So a CIA lady came from downstairs and played bad cop and told him how much trouble he was in, and the FBI played good cop. But they both told him that it was against the law to fight in Syria. And so when he was talking to me, he basically said, hey, if it's against the law, I'm not going to fight. But, I mean, they should give me a medal because I'm shooting the same guys that they're trying to kill. So his moral perspective was correct, but the technicality was incorrect. So at some point, somebody in the consulate decided that they would make an example of him and charge him with this crime. But they couldn't do anything in Turkey because it's not U.S. soil. So they had to trick him into getting back to the U.S. and then incriminating himself. And right now he's in lockdown. He's only allowed out 2 hours a day in solitary confinement in Alexandria.
So is it the fact that he's sort of anti-Israel and anti-Zionist, and did that do him in? I mean, he's just an idiot. I mean, I guess there's no law against being stupid, is there?
No, and the problem is that he was flagged by a guy who goes under the alias of Ibn Ben Zion, who works for the Times of Israel. His Facebook page was penetrated. They had photos posted of his Facebook page before the FBI did a subpoena on March 30th. And then his video was picked up by Memory, which is a sort of a charity or a nonprofit run by a former Israeli intelligence colonel.
That's M-E-M-R-I, right? M-E-M-R-I spelled.
Yeah, correct.
Go ahead.
But the point is that immediately flagged him as a potential terrorist. And, of course, putting videos of yourself on YouTube talking about shooting down helicopters is going to get your attention anyway. So, yes, he did everything he could, I call him the Occidental terrorist because he's from the West, he's clueless, he had no idea who he was fighting with, and then he only learned from reading media reports about what he did, how serious his predicament was.
So why are they throwing the book at the guy? I mean, what's the FBI get out of this? I mean, there's some serious
things they should be
doing.
The same reason that cops give out tickets in the carpool lane. You know, it's easy pickings. It gets a lot of headlines. It looks like you copped a terrorist. But I think this will turn out to be more embarrassing than anything else because our support for Syria is on the rebel side. We don't support the government of Syria, and we're providing, I think it's $12 million last time I saw, in direct support and a lot in covert support to overthrow the government of Bashar Assad. So he's baffled. His father is mystified as to why he's a criminal.
So what is the reason that had he not been as loopy as he appears to be and just sort of having a good time, and I don't know, you know, obviously you don't need too many qualifications as a soldier to join this Free Syrian Army, because most of them are just citizens, right? Who've never
right. They give you a month of training. It costs $100 to get into Syria. You go in, you sign up. They give you a month of training if you're like a shoemaker or a bookkeeper, and then they put you out in the front lines. It's not technically against the law to fight overseas. There is a mercenary act, but no one's been charged under it. What's against the law was consorting or supporting al-Nusra, which is considered a franchise of al-Qaeda, and then also using or firing a weapon of mass destruction. And these are very, very shaded technicalities.
Well, but what I was going to suggest is that if the guy wasn't so out of it, he would have, you know, the FBI and the CIA might want to have recruited the guy. But was is he his own worst enemy?
Yeah, because, you know, I've gone in with other American jihadis that went to fight, and it's very secretive. I mean, they basically hide you in a trunk. You wear civilian clothing. There's no photographs. There's no record, unless you're killed, of course. Remember, I found John Walker Lynn, who was told to pretend he was Irish.
So that's the American Taliban in Afghanistan from the beginning of the first Afghan war, or the beginning of the Afghan war.
But he was told by bin Laden's people to say that he was Irish if he was captured, so that it wouldn't draw attention to the fact that he was American. When he was interrogated, he said nothing. If you remember the famous video of Mike Spann and Dave Tyson trying to interrogate John Walker Lynn, he said nothing. So the bottom line is that most Americans that fight overseas don't brag about it on their Facebook page.
Well, it's difficult to know exactly what this guy did. I mean, you know, all he did was fire an RPG. Is that about it? Although he rescued a couple of people, you said?
There's some video I have of him actually being under attack. I don't see him actually fighting. There's a lot of pictures of him posing. You know, like he'll hold an RPG and then his friend will hold the RPG. He'll hold an AK. You know, Eric is prone to exaggeration. His father said that he's kind of a BSer. You know, he likes to charm the ladies and impress his friends. So I don't know if what he told the FBI was entirely truthful or whether it was fabricated or whether it was dead, you know, centered truth. But he has a penchant for exaggeration from reading his Facebook page. And he's also disabled because he has a plate in his head. And his father said that affected his thinking and his mood, so he may be bipolar. There's a bunch of things that may or may not come out in the trial.
And he's got a plate in his head because when he was in the Army stateside, he crashed a truck, right?
Right. He was never deployed overseas. He worked in a bridge unit, and he had an accident. And his father said he cried when he was told he could no longer serve in the military after his accident. So he's been a bit of a lost soul ever since, maybe kind of a Walter Mitty. Mm-hmm. You know, he likes to go to these places and take pictures of himself, which is very unusual for someone that was hardcore. If you were hardcore, you wouldn't have a photograph of you anywhere.
Sure. Well, I thank you for joining us, filling us in on this odd story, you know, which, of course, is getting a lot of press coverage about the American jihadi. And he's been denied bail, and now he's facing trial. But I guess what you're saying is that it may all, when it all comes out in the trial, it may not look as bad as.
Yeah, and keep in mind, there's ramifications for things like drone strikes against American citizens and entrapment. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that'll come out during the trial that should make every American slightly nervous about how we capture terrorists.
Well, Robert Young-Pelton, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Young-Pelton, who's an author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer. He's the publisher of Dangerous Magazine and has a first-hand perspective on the war on terror from direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. His books include The World's Most Dangerous Places, Come Back Alive, Three Worlds Gone Mad, License to Kill, Hired Guns, and the War on Terror, and his autobiography, The Adventurist. He has an article at Foreign Policy, A Weapon of Minded Destruction, How Eric Haroun, the American Jihadist in Syria, was duped by the FBI into incriminating himself. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how conservatives still run America despite losing elections.